My name is Christopher Horak, and I'm a resident director here at the University of Southern Maine. And to me, pride means showing up for the communities that we care about and making sure that everyone feels safe to live life as their truest self.
Yeah, that was Chris from our USM LGBTQ plus community, letting us know what pride means to them. So it's 9:15, you're listening to WMPG 90.9 here in the University of Southern Maine. I'm Anella, here with Steve and Megan, who are facilitating a conversation today about pride, reflections on pride, and about Maine queer history, and what pride means to you. What does pride mean to you? I'll answer it first, because pride means, for me, it's a time for me to reflect on people who've really fought and been activists throughout the history. And you know, when I arrived here in Maine, gay marriage was not legal. So and I honestly didn't think it would happen in my lifetime. So when it happened really quickly back in, was it 2014, maybe it was
12 in Maine. 2012 in Maine. Yeah.
Oh, are you really?
Yeah.
Oh, because I thought it was like a, it was 2014. I took advantage of it really quickly. Yeah. But that's for me, it's like the people that came before me that really struggled and fought, and we're all still fighting right to this day. My, you know, I was lucky enough, my first Pride was in London, and it's absolutely huge there. And Brighton Pride as well in the UK. If you've ever been to the UK, Brighton Pride is like hundreds of thousands of people. And in fact, World Pride was in London one time. Massive. I don't even know how many people were there. Million, maybe a million. I don't know.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'll pass it over. Megan, what's your take on Pride? What's it mean to you?
I think for me it means finding. I think it is that finding community and being in a queer space, because that was like one of the first places I was in, like a massive queer space of like just sea of queers. And like the only other time that had been the case was I think it was even, I hadn't done it yet, I also went to P-Town, and I had the same feeling of being at Pride, was that thing of like just sea of gay, and like that weight that you don't know you carry kind of decreases in a huge way. So I think that's what I think Pride is finding that community, being in a massive queer group in ways that you don't get to on a daily basis.
Yeah, and having that support around you, it's, What about you, Steve?
Yeah.
I was trying to think of my first Pride. Pretty sure, because I left Maine after a pretty intense 2 years here with the Wildstein stuff and all that. The end of August 1975, to go to a progressive law school called People's College of Law in Los Angeles, because I was going to save the world as a criminal defense lawyer. For some reason, it didn't happen that way. But so my first Pride was, and it was Christopher Street in New York, and the one in L.A. originally was Christopher Street West, and that was in West Hollywood, and that would have been my first one in 76. And my first one, I had joined a Marxist collective called the Lavender and Red Union. Google it. And so we had a protest march against the regular Pride, even back then, 76, because there was a gay community services center strike, and we were on the side of the workers versus the management. This is when the early gay movement actually had become very corporate in some ways. So the workers were complaining about working conditions, and there were a bunch of us in the community that sided with them. So we had a kind of a counter march of, like, I think we had about 1,200 people in Hollywood, at a park in Hollywood. And, of course, then the West Hollywood one took off, was five times our size. But anyway, it was kind of in the tradition of protest. So that's always been, like, when Howard mentioned that, you know, the veterans from jail, or the people that had been, what, commoted? Is that what you were?
Yeah. Disorderly and commoting. Yes,
I'll have license with that over the years. Anyway, I understand that, that how corporates become and everything. I remember, especially during the Reagan years, there were, in West Hollywood, there were contingents of white cis men, gay men with their designer bags, like,
oh yeah,
you know, marching together in cadence or whatever because of their buying power. That was their contingent, you know. And I'm like, oh, my God, we were, all this stuff was happening in Central America at the time. And I'm like, okay. So we have been joined by Wendy Chapkus.
Dr. Wendy Chapkus,
excuse me. A professor here at USM and a longtime community activist. One of my best friends, I would like to say. And so let's go to you with what Pride means to you and some of your own history.
Well, my very first Pride was in Santa Cruz, California in the early 1970s. I remember a small group of us walking down the street, really small, maybe 20 people. And the woman who was leading us, urging us to sing a Holly Near song about we are a...
Gentle, angry people,
yeah. It was moving. It was really important, I thought, to be in the streets. I didn't feel that gentle in those days. And in fact, you talking about the corporatization of Pride reminds me that pretty soon after that, probably within the next decade or less, we were organized as Queer Nation, and we were storming shopping malls in the Santa Cruz area, shouting, you know, we're here, we're queer, and we're not going shopping, was the slogan. And so Pride for me has always been an opportunity to come together with the community, to have a lot of fun, because I always find Pride, even, you know, under dire circumstances, to be fun. We're fun people. We're amazing. Yeah.
Very festive.
Yeah, very festive, exactly.
I will say, so talking about Pride being fun, which Pride, Portland Pride is still going on, despite the rain. Come on down. Starts at 1 o'clock. My first Pride in Boston, which was Boston Pride, I remember there was a float with drag queens on the back of it, and it was like one of the early days of like the RuPaul, so there were some of the RuPaul people, and I think her name was Sweet Pea, mm-hmm. who was on this float, and directly behind the float of drag queens was one of the Massachusetts politicians who was like running and marching behind the thing, and Sweet Pea like leans out of the back of the car and she's like, are you for queer LGBTQ rights? And she's like, yeah. And she's like, vote for this man. I'm like, excellent marketing.
Nice thing in Massachusetts, you can just vote for the governor now.
Right, that's, yeah.
You know, I was thinking when Wendy was saying about her shopping mall slogan, I was remembering Ron's favorite, Ron McClinton's favorite button and favorite look. We're here, we're queer, get used to it, mm-hmm. was his motto, and took that voice everywhere. That was back in the time when it was hard for me to do that. I mean, it was just hard, you know. It's like it was very hard for me to use the word wife to refer to my wife, even after we got married, just because it had such bad connotations for me.
Wife is still unreconstructed for me. Queer I can do.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. Well, the only reason I can do wife is that when I first got elected to the legislature, I went on a bus tour, and I was sitting next to a Republican senator from Calais, and I was talking to her about who I was, et cetera. And when I was talking about my partner, because we even though we were married at that time, and every time I said partner, she said, you mean wife? And she did that to me for like 6 months until it finally came out of my mouth comfortably, because I had transformed it in my head. But having been a heterosexual wife twice, I didn't want to. The association was terrible for me.
Maine Micro Artisans is a certified Maine-made gift shop featuring fine handmade work from local Maine artisans. Visit them at their South Street location in Gorham and coming soon to the Bangor Mall. More information at shopsmallmaine.com. And everyone's covered their first Pride?
Yes. Yeah. I don't remember.
Yeah.
I'm sure it was in Portland, but I don't remember.
Yeah. And for people calling in, it's 780-4909. And I would just mention, if you can creatively, we've already mentioned the Winter Olympics and the Kentucky Derby. Mm-hmm. So if you have a sports reference in your Pride memories, please use that. But meanwhile, Wendy, you went to the Dyke March last night?
I did. It was glorious.
Give us a report.
Well, lots of people. I mean, it was pouring rain at 5, and the step-off was 6, so I was in Monument Square. I'm thinking, oh, my God, nobody's going to come. But people did. It was huge. Wow. And it stopped raining for us, so we marched up Congress Street. And the kickoff was energized by the Ideal Marching Band from Portland. And then we marched up to Congress Square Park, and DJ Liz was playing music, and people were dancing, and there were burlesque performers, and it was just delightful in every way, and it was a great way for me to start Pride.
Terrific. Okay, well, the precedent has been set. There's no reason why people shouldn't show up in huge numbers today.
No, yeah. I made my sign last night that says something like, we're not made of sugar. We don't melt in the rain.
That's right. We are a resilient people.
That's right. Yeah. Pride is still happening today, despite the rain. It's going to be at 1 o'clock. There's the parade, of course, and then there's also the tabling that's going on in Deering Oaks Park. Also in Deering Oaks Park is the Portland Farmers Market. WMPG is grateful for the support from listeners and from the Portland Farmers Market. The Portland Farmers Market takes place on Wednesdays and Saturdays, 7 a.m. to 1 p.m. at Deering Oaks Park. SNAP is welcome, with bonus bucks added at the info booth to stretch food budgets. More at portlandmainefarmersmarket.org.
And Wendy, we've been talking a lot about history here. Could you talk about your oral history project you've been doing for a few years now?
Yeah. We've got about 100 oral history interviews with people from Maine, talking LGBTQ people, talking about their experiences being queer or organizing or both. The interviews are all online on the USM Digital Commons. You can find it by Googling Queering the Past, and it's spelled Q-U-E-R-Y-I-N-G, so it's like Queering the Past. And I've been posting them on my Facebook page, one a day for the last...
Right, I've been noticing that,
yeah. Yours is coming, Steve. And in addition to that, we did some video... shot some video of people talking about the disappearing gay bars in town, and made a short film out of that. So that will be on the Queering the Past website as well soon for people to download and watch.
Bar stories?
Bar stories, yeah. Bar stories from Queer Maine, and all the raw footage from that. So even if you didn't make it into the final 15-minute cut, there's probably an hour or more of people talking about bar stories from this area. So yeah, it's been a great project. It's been ongoing for at least 5 years, maybe longer. I lose track of time easily as I get older. Yeah. Everything feels like 5 years ago. I think, no, actually, that was 10 years ago.
Yeah.
But anyway, it's been a great project. And in November, we're going to be doing a new round of interviewing. So if people listening to this would like to share their life story, it's about an hour-long interview on just audio interview with a USM researcher who's been trained to do oral histories, just please email me. My email is my last name, chapkiss@maine.edu, and I will put you on the list to be interviewed in November.
And you can also come visit the LGBTQ Collections table down in Pride today. We do have flyers that give you a direct link to a little form so that Wendy can get your information, then contact you to be part of the project. So definitely come visit us if you're interested. And please give us all of your stories, because as a historian, queer oral histories are one of the major, major, major things that help us understand the history and the gaps in the history of the stuff. Because if we don't have a physical thing, if we don't have somebody telling us, if we don't have a thing, then it's lost to time. We don't have a historical, quote-unquote, record of what that thing is.
Not surprisingly, LGBTQ history doesn't typically make it into the mainstream textbook, so we have to be very diligent in protecting our own history.
Yeah. It's got to be consciously done.
Yes.
If you don't tell the story, someone else will, and they'll get it wrong.
Yes.
And some of the flavorful details of, people's stories is just wonderful. I just think it's an incredible addition to the collection, these oral histories that Wendy's students have done, and she's trained to do it. And when they came to interview me in my, when I was living in Lewiston in my living room, it was just, from their questions, you know, I knew they'd done their research. They, didn't miss a beat. And, well, for Howard Solomon, he knows how much I talk, that they had to come back for a second time, Howard. Yes, it's true. It ran over an hour, maybe even twice. But anyway, so where are we going here? We're waiting for new phone calls. I thought I'd lined a few people up here, so maybe it's a time for you to call. But where do we go for? Oh, I wanted to, another little thing in history. And it's like, when I got involved with the advisory committee at the collection, I have quite an appetite for work, and I'm a very curious person. So I came by a story recently of that whole library hall thing in Harpswell, where evidently there is a photo album of a drag tea party at Library Hall in the 1920s. And I'm just fascinated by stories like that. And I would love to have that album for the collection. But just the point being that we've been the fabric of, you know, Maine, of society in general, for decades. And simply because people, you know, it wasn't greatly advertised or not. I'm reading a book now on what the whole history, queer history of Washington, D.C. and the politics and the Lavender Scare and all this stuff. It's like, and people who have done the research, there's incredible books on our history that, like Wendy said, it's only being told for the first time in many cases because people have just not spent the time doing that. So I've always been motivated to build this collection, and Megan's been a big part of that now. It's I told her recently, I've been waiting for her all my life to to show up, and it's incredible. I always kind of like, even though I live some of that history myself, I still think Megan's more of an authority than I am because I forget stuff. Anyway.
And that's like the interesting thing about queer history is like we, and like queer communities, like we are not raised in like a queer household necessarily, with like some few exceptions. So like if we don't learn and we aren't taught it in schools, mm-hmm. so then we have to, we as our human, as a queer person, have to go out and actually search out the history. And so, which is why I think there's that challenge. It's challenging for us because like we aren't raised in the history in any way. It's not taught to us in any formal mm-hmm. way. So then to do it, we have to go and make a purposeful effort to go and find it.
Mm-hmm.
And so then that's person by person. And so if you don't think, which I would challenge you, that history is indeed incredibly interesting and fun and wacky,
mm-hmm.
That if you don't think you like history, you may not actually pursue it and figure mm-hmm. it out. And I think that's a detriment, because like if I say Anita Bryant Save the Children, a lot of people don't know what that is, and therefore mm-hmm. can't understand where we are in the current situation and time period, and can't kind of, in some ways, like right now, in some ways, like my historian brain is kind of giggling at all the anti-trans stuff, because it's the same stuff all over again. It's just mm-hmm. you've changed the people. Come on, mm-hmm. like we've seen this. So
ouch, though.
I know. Ouch, but also, do better. Like I don't know.
Well, like. The other thing that just is hitting everyone over the head now is that they want to disappear slavery and black history,
right. mm-hmm.
queer history,
right.
right across the board.
Yeah.
And if you don't have uncomfortable conversations about the past and history, you're not having a conversation at all.
Right.
And
it's certainly true that my students who come into the applied LGBTQ history class have no background in queer history, yeah. including the mm-hmm. queer students. And so before they can go out and do oral histories, we have to teach them basic LGBTQ history in this country so they have some context for it. And people are really surprised mm-hmm. To learn the history and to realize that it is not being taught. And it's actively, as you say, Steve, it's actively being suppressed in large parts of this country now.
Yeah.
Yeah, when you've been talking about the Anita Bryant thing, and I was involved in that time in the starting the orange juice boycott kind of stuff that happened.
In 1977.
Yeah, and, you know, it's like, I think Anita Bryant brought me a vitamin deficiency, but, you know, so I don't know what we could do to generate that now on Florida again. Yeah. It's just that the whole don't say gay stuff is really destructive, I mean, because it does exactly what Wendy is referring to, which is try to repress the history again and repress the current day reality, which is crazy to do, but it's what's happening.
Well, it certainly puts us on the front lines again, and I don't think that's a bad thing.
No.
Mm-hmm. I think we were getting a little comfortable in the sense that, we secured same-sex marriage, so we're just like everyone else now, and in fact, that was well premature to assume that the struggle was over, and I think all of this makes it quite clear. It's incredibly distressing and painful to me that queer youth are the ones that are being targeted, particularly trans youth, and people who are already struggling and have such high rates of self-harm and suicide and suicidal ideation, and that those are the people that are directly being challenged by adults, by politicians, is just obscene to me.
It occurs to me, one of the things I wanted to do here was do a pitch, since we ended Outcast last June, for the audience, especially youthful audience, to think about if they want to have a voice about what's going on in the world. WMPG has been incredible to us as embracing us when we first started Outcast. And they've had queer programming all along for decades here. It's very much to their credit. There are quite a few queer folk littered amongst the staff and DJs here as well. And it's a very welcoming, embracing place. So if you're a young person who's got an issue and wants to have a talk show or music or whatever you want to do, please call into the station and check it out. And now someone is calling in, but it's not, well, I won't say that. It's a friend and a longtime activist, Dale McCormick. Now I'm hearing, Dale? Dale, are you there? Let's see. Okay. We're going to have a call back.
Yeah, I saw her this week. She was up in the legislature for Pride Day. It was fun to have
her. And her name was invoked already today, so... not surprisingly, if you're talking about queer history in Maine. Mm-hmm. So we'll wait for the call back from Dale. I think she said she was going to call from her car. So let's go to some music, and then we'll hear the lyrical voice of Dale McCormick when we return. As the music fades, Dale, are you there?
Yeah, I am.
Hi, Steve. Hi. Are you driving somewhere on a rainy day?
Yeah, I wonder where I'm going. to Pride Portland.
There you go. All right. So have you been listening for a bit, or you want to talk?
I've been getting all my rain clothes into the knapsack so I can go to Pride.
So we've gone around the table on what Pride means to us and our first Pride and all that stuff. You got anything to say?
Oh, yeah. My first Pride, I was living in Iowa.
Uh-huh.
And five of us jumped into a VW Beetle and went to New York City, and we were at the first Pride.
Wow.
Oh, my gosh.
In New York. Yeah.
Absolutely.
I know, and it was, and Rita Mae Brown, I remember Rita Mae Brown was there in a sort of military-esque jacket.
Ah. Oh, yeah, Ruby Fruit Jungle was one of the required reading.
It actually sort of describes my coming out.
That book?
It describes pretty accurately my coming out.
Wow.
Ruby Fruit Jungle does.
Yeah.
Did you get any royalties, Dale? That would have been good.
No. Who all is there? Is that Lois?
That's Lois Galgay-Rickett, Wendy Chapkus, Megan McGregor from USM Library, and myself.
Oh, wow, what a good group.
Yeah, we have a full table.
And Dale,
with donuts and coffee.
For the younger group on the radio, who are you, and why are you important?
Well.
Thank you, Megan. Yeah. Megan's representing the younger group.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, I'm representing the older group. And I guess we can say that I am the first president of the MLCPA, Maine Lesbian Gay Political Alliance, which even to this day, Megan, I have sometimes slipped into saying MLCPA instead of Equality Maine.
Yes.
Which, of course, they morphed, MLCPA morphed into Equality Maine. Mm-hmm. And then after I was in 1990, when the Supreme Court, they're still at it, lobbed the issue of reproductive choice to the state, state legislatures, like where Lois is now, and Barb Wood was, many others. I decided that my internalized homophobia was a petty reluctance, and I had to run for the state senate, where my senator was basically against everything. Mm-hmm. So I did, and then I won by 0.05% of the vote.
0.05 is enough.
I think it was 0.5.
Just more than the other person. That's good.
Victory there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So worked on the civil rights bill for years and years and years. And actually, the only time I ever cried in the Senate, as you know, there's no crying in the Senate. You can cry in the House.
Yeah.
Oh, a baseball reference.
And was when Governor McKernan vetoed the civil rights bill that both the House and the Senate had passed.
Right, yeah. So for those of you who don't know, so Maine has had a long, so right now Maine is one of 23, I think it is, states in the U.S. that have an equality rights bill on the books. So most of the U.S. does not. We don't have a national one yet, like we have a national marriage equality thing. And it took years and years and years and years and years to get that passed, and Dale was instrumental in some of that stuff. We passed it by, the legislature passed it in 1990, passed a version of it in 1997. It got, in classic Maine style, referendumed and then repealed, and then finally they didn't fully pass it until 2005. And once again, the Senate and the legislature passed it. It went for referendum, and the referendum failed, so we won equality in Maine at that point.
Which is, to just make clear what that meant, until then, you could be fired from your job or denied an apartment or evicted from your apartment or denied a hotel room or denied service in a restaurant simply because you were queer.
Mm-hmm. And that can still happen in a lot of states in the U.S.
Yeah.
And just to give you a sense of back in the 70s and 80s when we started the bill, John Martin from Arista County was Speaker of the House, and the debate on the civil rights bill was so vile, with horrible images of gay people and barnyard language, that he, the the speaker cleared the gallery mm-hmm. of the house of all school children who had come to this. And then ahead, move ahead 24 or 5 years to when we passed it in the House and the Senate. And the debate at that time took 4 hours. 4 hours, because every member of the House wanted to be on the record supporting the bill. How's that for a change?
You'll love the fact, Dale, that a couple of years ago, or maybe a year ago, because John Martin was still in the legislature, I confronted him about clearing the gallery that day, and he denied that he had done that. And I said,
I don't know that it was awful. Do you think it was awful? It must
not. Well, no, I just was I was surprised that he had I think repressed the fact that he had done that. But
And we've come a long way, but boy, do we have a long way to go with all this vile right wing. I mean, the right wing, the Republicans aren't even trying to solve the problems of the country. They're just dividing us, and guess who is their favorite football? Mm-hmm. Gay people.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Along
Among
with
others.
People of color, yeah. poor people, yeah. and yeah. immigrants.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You're right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right now, it feels like that queer people are sharing the stage with refugees in the state house in terms of people are really ragging on.
And drug using people and
although that's a
unhoused
people. Yeah, unhoused people. Yeah. Mm. It's hard to pick out who's being picked on the most. The only good news is that in the margin in the House has gotten tighter this year, so we only have maybe an 8-vote Democratic margin.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Dale, for putting us in a very good position that we are right now when we find ourselves in these trying times, because I think it would have been a lot worse if it had not been this far pushed.
It wasn't only me. It was a whole bunch of us.
Yeah. But Dale was a leader in it. I really appreciate your service.
The early years, aside from working on the bill, I asked my friend Clive what she thought the forming of MLCPA, why it was important. And she said just that we got together, mm-hmm. that we organized. And I think that's true. I mean, I know we did a lot of things, but just in organizing ourselves, we formed a main LGBTQ plus community of activists.
Mm-hmm. We were just talking. Yeah, we were just talking about how we did that with $0 and zero support, and just
Can I tell you a funny story before I go?
Absolutely.
So one time I was at a NGL, National Gay and Lesbian Task Force meeting, I think it was them, and I was sitting in a room, huge, this conference, and I viewed it that we were at a bar. I rarely go to bars. Mia Puzo was sitting next to me. Help me, Lois, Wendy. She was New York LGBTQ leader.
Yeah.
And so she said to me, well, think what you could do if you had money.
You're talking about Ginny Apuzzo? Is that who you're talking about?
Yeah, Ginny Apuzzo. And I said, well, what would we do with money? I feel I guess I couldn't make. I've always been good at living in the present, but that was a little too stupid.
Yeah.
And now I don't even know what the budget is. Do any of you know what the budget is? Well, that means
All right, Dale. Thanks for calling in. Happy Pride.
Thanks. having me. Happy Pride.
All right.
Bye.
Bye-bye. And we'll go to some more music, Jessica. Have a little music break here. See to the night with outside, but